Wildwood Kin and Grace. It's UCB One. I'm Paul Hammond, and he is here. It's always a pleasure to welcome him to the studio. Big Wazza is in. Actually, what is it the kids in your youth group at church call you?
Oh, Big Daddy Wazza.
Big Daddy Wazza.
Boys, but
it Big
sounds
Daddy
like
Heath.
A huge... I'm not that huge. I'm slim and I've flossed a little...
You're not an unsubstantial fella, but it's...
You know, 6 foot.
It's big. It's rugby player.
6 foot,
big, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's not fat big. It's
no,
rugby
it's
player
just...
Big.
Nice pick.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Warren Evans is with us. He is the CEO of Sports Chaplaincy. You can find out more about them by going to their website, which is... Put them on the spot.
Sportschaplaincy.org.uk.
It is indeed. Sportschaplaincy.org.uk. You look like a man who does enjoy a nice steak, though.
Yes, I do, Paul. Is that an offer?
No, it's not. Jolly well not, mate, because I'm going meat-free next week. You never fancy doing the old vegetarian, flexitarian, pescatarian, stepping back from the meat?
You've stunned me.
No.
I could think of you a real... And no offence to our vegetarian brothers and sisters, no. But the simple answer is no.
No.
No. I do like my meat.
Do you? How'd you like your steak done?
Medium rare.
Medium rare. Just nice and pink.
Oh, Paul, you're probably getting us a
little bit blood flowing.
Offending too many listeners. I do like my food in general, and meat is part of that.
Yeah, well, yes, and me. Although, we should just point out, because earlier on, Jeremy was on, he emailed in, and he said, he sort of tongue-in-cheek, Sarky, good to hear that the rest of your team has said that they will go meat-free next week as well. He said that just as a joke.
And rightly so.
Quite right, too. And you are my witness, because did or did not they come into the studio over the news there and actually say the entire Talking Point team, now it has to be said, for some it's a bigger sacrifice than others, because some of them are already quite a way down the road of this, but the entire Talking Point team are going meat free starting Monday morning for a week.
That's what I got the impression. That certainly came across to me. Hands up, solidarity.
Solidarity. Yeah, absolutely.
Holding your hands up in that challenge.
In fairness, I got it more as competition. We're going to do it better than you. But yeah, either way, I think
so. I might do it better than you as well.
As long as I can have eggs, cheese and butter, I'll be all right. Anyway, so yes, we're going to be doing that next week. And our life issues will be running next week on that. And can I just say a quick hello to Becky, who got in touch to say, hey, Paul, just tuned in. A theological discussion around meat. That will be really interesting. And it's not just the treatment of animals, but all the chemicals that go into our meat as well. Well, we're going to be talking about it next week. So like Nick, who got in touch with some opinions as well, everybody's keeping their powder dry, as it were, for next week and for the conversations that will start on Monday morning. Warren's here to look back on the week for us at the moment. And I suppose this sort of period, quite a busy time for your guys in terms of a lot of the winter sports clubs and so on, going the football and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
yeah, busy time, pre-season for other sports. Yeah, it's always busy. I guess for most sports channel, it's never really stops, because you're always dealing with people. You're not just dealing with an activity. You're dealing with people, and people always have challenges.
And sport does give us an opportunity to see the heart. Though, I mean, I'm thinking of, like Andy Murray. I noticed you're not putting him down for us to talk about today, but just
we can talk about Andy Murray if you want.
I think it would be good to, because it did strike me the level of commitment of especially top flight sports people, but also your sort of run of the mill local clubs guys and girls as well. That. You know, he's ruined his body by the time he got into his 30s by pursuing his passion for that sport. It takes a certain mentality to go after that, doesn't it?
That's not uncommon across any sport, to be honest. You put your body under so much strain and stress that there are certain players, when I've spoken to them, they're really concerned how they're going to be when they reach their 50s, which is not old.
Yes.
But yeah, it's this focused, addictive behaviour that makes them successful, but there are consequences. And I guess when we look at sports people, the consequences are so obvious, but when we look at ministry or business, we think workaholics, that's okay. But there are still ramifications when we don't take rest.
Yes, absolutely. So when somebody gets to his sort of level and they go, oh, well, that's it, I'm going to pack it in now. I mean, and he got very upset saying that it was, you know, he didn't know whether he'd go as far as Wimbledon and so on. And a lot of us are sitting around, well, come on, let's be honest, Andy, it's going to be all right for you. You're not exactly short of a bob or two, are you? You know, it's going to be fine. But it's not so much that, it's more the, what is it, an emotional, maybe even a spiritual hole it leaves?
I think, it's a number of things. I think it's about identity. It's about your whole life has been run round that sport, your whole day, your routine, your focus, you live and breathe it. So, yeah, it's interesting that people's identity, mindset, worth, loads of great things to dig in deeper there.
Yes.
And aspirations and what next? Where does life lead next? Because it's always been we always think, oh, it's the height of the career, but you've got to think they've been doing this from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
And so it's all their life, and the next part of their life, what does it look like?
And not even just their own sort of personal sense of who they are. But, I mean, you take, for example, the Murray house. I mean, there's Andy, there's Jamie's brother, there's his mum, and their whole corporate family identity has been so tied into tennis and involvement in tennis. It's a big sort of, what do we do now?
Yeah, and because they were doing it together at times, and that changes, and it changes family dynamics, and it changes. So you'll see it and you'll read a number of stories of not just tennis players, but a lot of elite players that are depressed or enter a point of depression because obviously they've been playing sport all the time. That physiology changes. It makes massive difference with chemicals being released in your brain. Depending where they've been travelling, family life's different. So it puts a huge amount of pressures and tension on individuals, and how people cope with that can be quite challenging.
We're going to chat some more about stuff that's in the news with Warren, but if you want to find out more about the work of sports chaplaincy, and indeed if you are into your sport, how perhaps you could take on the role of a chaplain to your local sports club, well, have a look at sportschaplaincy.org.uk.
Give me your heart, give me your song, sing it with all your might. Come to the fountain and you can be satisfied. There is a peace, there is a love, you can get lost inside. Come to the fountain and let me hear you testify.
Sing. testify.
We'll say hi to Jeremy as we're chatting, because as the team have committed to go meat free, he suggested it. He's also doing it. Good for you, sir. Well, we'll see what happens, eh? We'll see what happens. Now, looking back on the week with Warren Evans today, I'm kind of surprised you wanted to raise this first story, because you kind of like your social media, don't you?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do. Don't tell lies. Jesus is listening. Yes, you do.
Yeah, we all have challenges. And I think because of my role. But it's an interesting story. This is about a university switches off social media to help students' well-being. And I think one person that challenges me how much screen time I'm watching. But also, when you read this, they reckon how it's impacting students' lives, their identities being based around the virtual living and not living in the moment.
Yes.
And you see it when people are watching things. Instead of watching it, they're filming it.
Yeah.
And they're not even. And so I was really challenged about that whole feeling of your value being based. And then when you're not in a great place, you look at everyone's social media and it looks great. But that's a snapshot in a moment in time. And so I think it's a really good thing to maybe we all need to do a bit of a detox every so often.
You see, it's not an issue for me, because although I'll use a bit of the old Twitter, primarily when I'm on air and so on. Even then, I mean, I drive the social media team here round the bend, because are you posting? I don't know. It's not something that I've ever really engaged with. But there are, as you say, there are some people who their whole focus of life, their window on their own life as well as the rest of the world is framed by social media, which, given how negative and toxic it can be, what are the thoughts? I mean, you'd thought university students would actually be able to get their heads around this, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would, but obviously they've recognised as a university it's impacting relationships, it's impacting health, and it's impacting results. And it's a whole generation. We were obviously young-ish, but we weren't brought
younger
up...
Younger than me.
Thank you. We were brought up with no social media, so social media, people can take it, leave it,
yeah,
or whatever. But you've got a generation that have lived on social media, so their identity is based on social media, how they communicate is through social media, and different platforms communicate slightly differently. And I think part of that detox is one bit of spiritual discipline, but also I say, I know when I talk to millennials, Generation Y, Generation Z, however you want to put it, is they expect everybody to operate the same way they do. And generations don't, different generations don't.
Yeah.
But they expect that everybody should answer the phone, everyone should see this, everyone should see that. And we simply don't. But for me, it is that mental health. Am I watching too much on my phone? Does it get to me when I see that I've had a bad day and someone else has had a great day? So it challenges me to think about, you know, it's all about me. It challenges the outlook on life. And also, I think it's great to put things in perspective. You know, don't have your mobile phone at the table, my wife says. Put the phone down, take the earplugs out. But we do live in this. I'm on the train a lot.
Is there a sense of which your missus is sitting listening to this morning, just falling off a chair laughing, that you are actually putting forward this idea?
My wife does laugh at me on the odd occasion, especially when I hurt myself the other week. But, and she does show tremendous compassion as well.
He says quickly.
wanting to have my tea tonight when I get in. I think part of this is the whole family thing. I'm on the train a lot, travelling, and you can see people put the headsets on,
yeah,
right? And there's no... People lose that social dynamic of being able to communicate. I know that in sport, when you've gone into changing rooms, and where people years ago would talk to you, the head's down, they're on the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, yeah, it's... So I actually think this is a good thing, and it challenges me to do a detox.
I love the story. It was the Montford University have done it in Leicester. And they're also then, they've done stuff to put other stuff in the way. So the library is encouraging people to actually look at books, as
wow,
opposed to online. It's a bit radical, that, isn't it? But they've also done things like free gym classes for people to switch their phones off and so switch their social media off, so that they can go and do some gym classes, do some sport, do some exercise, and so on. And I do think there is a danger. I mean, for me, the biggest thing about it can be really handy. My lad is in South America at the minute, travelling, and, you know, it's really great because on WhatsApp and Instagram and so on, and they're able to share pictures, yeah. But also you're able to know that they're okay and just have a bit of a chat and say happy birthday and all that sort of stuff. But it really does, as you say, isolate us if we're not careful. So that instead of actually talking to one another, we end up sort of reading each other's Twitter feed and so on. I'm showing that I'm old now because I'm still talking about Twitter, aren't I? Instead of Insta. I think we should move on. What do you think? If you have an opinion, email Paul at ucb.co.uk.
Calling and calling, nobody home. It feels like I'm falling alone. Out on an island, SOS on the beach, watching your plane pass over me. How could you miss me with my hands in the air? I thought you were listening. I thought you'd be there. Where were you when I had no one to turn to? Where were you when my worst fears were coming true?
Francesca Battistelli, and Where Were You? Warren Ellis is with me. He is the CEO of sportschaplaincy.org.uk. Well, it's not called sportschaplaincy.org.uk. That's the website, the organisations. You know what I mean. Sports Chaplaincy UK is the organisation and do tremendous work right across the country supporting people in sport, but also supporting at local level people who operate as chaplains, just they're caring for the spiritual well-being as well as perhaps the physical and emotional well-being of those who are involved in local sports clubs. And your next story, talking about the way in which, as a nation, we are divided. People will immediately assume that we are going to talk about Brexit here. And whilst it would be fair to say Brexit discussions do divide people, I mean, for me, next week it's going to be the breakfast discussion, of course, bacon or no bacon. But you're not talking Brexit at all here, are you? This is something where there's perhaps hope for us.
Yes, this is an interesting report from a think tank called United for All Ages. And Britain, it says, is amongst the world's most age-segregated societies. And there's a great warning about it. But then the report is really an interesting report because it basically then talks about, and we've all seen the odd bit where children or primary children or preschool children go into nursing homes.
Yes.
And they talk about...
It was a Channel 4 programme, wasn't there?
Yeah. And it talks about that. And so it's, and especially when families these days live far apart and you don't always have that grandma or granddad figure in your life, or the opposite, that you don't have grandchildren because they live far. And so reading this report, it really gives a little bit of a glow, because actually it's about giving back, but also everyone's a winner in this situation. So it talks about how schools or nurseries should do this, because one, it's great, it helps children with anxiety, but it also helps elderly people with loneliness and anxiety, and so it helps young people with their social skills, and so everyone's a winner. But you know, it's a great opportunity for the church, isn't it? We, our churches, I sometimes get a little bit concerned when churches are just a generation. We should be cross-generation, demonstrating that God loves the oldest to the youngest. And actually, we all bring something to the table, unique energy, wisdom, grey hair, different coloured hair, whatever you want to do. But I find this really interesting, but also a challenge to us as the wider church. How can we navigate this? Because it's all about cost as well. And actually, there's not a lot of cost taking someone to visit someone who's older.
Yes, yeah.
And I've got a great story. I remember when I was a child, my dad was a pastor, and he aligned all the young people to visit some of the older people in the church. And we never had grandparents. My grandparents passed away before I was born. And I visited a lady for just under 20 years before she passed away, and she was my adopted grandma, and she impacted my life so strong. My Auntie Rita, and it was just, I was one of four lads, and it meant I could visit someone on my own, have my own space with her, and she spoiled me, she loved on me. I wasn't the greatest communicator at the age of 10 and 11, but just that environment of someone else outside your family. And so for me, I know how precious and important that was. But yeah, I think this is a great opportunity to flag up to churches and say, hey, why can't we do this? Why can't we take our nursery from our four walls at times and take it into our local nursing home?
And it's very interesting, because we'd see in our church, we've got adults now, sort of young adults who are in their mid to late 20s. And part of the reason that they are in church now, because, you know, they, as many of us did, wandered their own way for a while. But they're back in church now, and they're quite connected with church now. And part of the reason is because of the way in which some of those older members of the church engage with them. I know my parents, my wife's parents, lived far away from us when we were working in our church where we are now, and there were older members who took on that role of surrogate grandparent.
Yes.
To our aunt, and it was really interesting when they died to see the way in which my lads came from all over the country to make sure they were at the funeral.
Yes.
So great was the respect, and so lasting is the memory of what those people put into their lives.
Oh, and I think that's so powerful when I call it adopt a grandma, adopt a grand, because it's so powerful. Because instead of looking at someone and judging them, your views, you see someone through a different lens, and they see you through a different lens. And if I remember, someone said something negative, I didn't have to say anything. My auntie Rita was, no, you don't say that about.
And
you need that. We all need someone who's willing to cheer us on and for no other reason, because God loves you and they love you.
Yeah,
and that's the power. Absolutely. And so through this, I think it's a great opportunity for.
But I suppose historically, sport provided that opportunity as well, didn't it? Because, you know, it is, you're absolutely right that the church is a great place where we can do it. But I wonder why it is we've lost it in other elements of society. I remember going and being part of an archery club, and there were guys there who were in their 80s, and there were youngsters there who were barely in their teens. And the way in which the older men, and it was primarily men and lads, and the way in which the older men then, I suppose, almost taught, just by being around them, taught those youngsters how to behave, what was acceptable, what was unacceptable. It was like there was a really sort of hard, fast rule. When there was the fellas on their own, they would swear a blue streak, but if there were women there, they wouldn't. And those youngsters, if they stepped out of line on that, they got told good and proper. You know, there was a dynamic that was very powerful. It's important for society to have that.
Oh, very much so. And we had the same, it's not an athletic sport, but it was billiards. Older men play with younger men. and that whole fathering figure and teaching social skills outside your own father, which puts it all in context. And you're right, we see that happen in sport from a coaching perspective and people standing on the touchline, but you do need that in society. We need that cross-generation, that we fertilise each other and we share those skill sets. And yeah, that's great. I think it's so powerful and positive.
If you have a comment, we'd like to hear from you today. Get in touch and put your two Penrith in. Hey, Paul, says Kerry-Ann, and says, I think they're talking about social media. I think there are extremes why people only focus on those who use social media and why it's deemed so bad. It is not just young generations expecting things, such as answering the phone, reading emails and WhatsApp messages at 2 a.m. The older generation expect people to work to their ways. Why? Why should we? I hate communicating with people verbally. I hate going to gyms and meeting people. I hate having to defend my online use. I hate telling people, having people tell me what I should and shouldn't do. Yet because I wouldn't conform, I would be looked down upon. I'm sorry, but online virtual living is becoming our present and our future. Everything is app-based and everyone is moving further and further apart. And I think you're probably right, Kerry-Ann, and you know, at the end of the day, you have the right to expect people to respect your way of doing things. But I do actually think that thought that everyone is moving further and further apart, I think it's a sad one.
I think it's got to be something that we're aware of and cautious about, because as she clearly says, I want to operate life, as I want to operate life, that's a dangerous view in one level because there's no consideration for anyone else. But actually, long term, you don't know. And we don't know, the society doesn't know, because it's quite a modern thing, that we don't know the ramifications on our mental health, our physical health, our eyesight. People who don't know the ramifications of all the social media. And it's not a negative. There is tons of positives, obviously. But I think everything in moderation. And sometimes the pendulum swings too far.
And you do see that. I mean, we often castigate millennials as being the people who are always on social media and so on and so. But actually, there's an awful lot of millennials who are now going, nah, I'm going to come off. And that whole digital detox, I'm coming off, I'm going to step away from it, because they feel that it is isolating them from the world around them. Kerry-Ann, thank you for your comment. Of course, you can get in touch and share your thought, ironically, online by emailing paul at ucb.co.uk, or you could give us a ring, 01782 911 111.
You're listening to UCB One.
To lose, I feel unqualified for what you're calling me to. With all of your strength, I got no excuse, 'cause broken people are exactly who you use. So give me faith alive, Daniel, in the lion's den. Give me hope alive, Moses, in the wilderness. Giants with confidence. You took a shepherd boy and made him king. So I'm gonna trust you and give you everything. I'll be a conqueror, 'cause you fight for me. I'll be a champion, claiming your victory. So give me faith alive, Daniel. Give me hope like Moses in the wilderness. Give me a heart like David, Lord, be my defense, so I can face my giants with confidence. I'm gonna sing and shout and shake the wall. Won't stop until I see them fall. Gonna stand up, step out when you call. Jesus, Jesus, I'm gonna sing and shout and shake the walls. Won't stop until I see them fall. Gonna stand up, step out when you call. Jesus, give me faith like Daniel in the lion's den. Give me hope like Moses in the wilderness. Give me a heart.
sanctus reel and confidence. Warren Evans is looking back on the week for us, so what's the next story that caught your eye?
Now, this was an interesting story. I mean, you read the headline, you think it's quite shocking, then you read the detail of it and you think, wow, that's a little bit crazy. But it's got some extremes and it's got some good and challenging points in it. Police quiz a dad after baby fed hot sauce. The father of a newborn baby was shocked to be confronted by police after posting on social media that he'd accidentally fed his son chili. So that wasn't quite what took place. He was having a meal with his wife, took the baby off his wife, but he'd had hot wings and wiped his hands and stuck his thumb off. Finger in it to soothe his son, and realised he may have had hot sauce on his fingers, but actually that was it. And I think the challenge of this, coming from the social media perspective, is being careful what you post. But actually there's a positive that actually police followed that up to make sure there was not an issue.
Yeah, you see, and therein is the I suppose, the rub of what's been done, said around this, because he had the remnants of hot sauce on his hand. He put his knuckle in his baby's mouth just to soothe it, as, you know, as we all have done as mums and dads. And then the child pulled a face. Didn't cry or anything, but just pulled a face. So he posted, guess your child doesn't like hot sauce sort of thing. And next thing, police are knocking on his door. Now, it was a welfare check, just to make sure everything was all right. Given how people have ignored so often the needs and the dangers being posed to children, I'm kind of gratified that somebody thought, we better get the law to check this out, and that the police turned up.
Yes, and I completely agree with you.
Whether I'd have felt as positive about it being me that being the dad is another matter.
I can understand his perspective of being upset, especially as a new dad and all the emotions and just posting something funny. But that's the whole thing about media. It doesn't sense, it doesn't tell emotion.
Yes.
You can put LOL on the end of it. It doesn't. But it's interesting.
Emojis.
It's emojis.
Yeah.
But it also, if different cultures, what made me laugh and think, well, in different cultures they eat significantly hotter food than maybe some of our native English people in that sense, and that's quite okay. So I just found it a bizarre one, but there is a positive that the police followed up on welfare. That's fantastic. But I guess I could see also the father's upset, and also we've got to be careful what we post. Sometimes people can misread, but also use it in a positive way.
It is the other thing about social media, of course. The things that we have posted, they, as there's a campaign going on at the moment to remind, and billboards going up all across the country, to remind people some of the promises that were made by pro-Brexit politicians ahead of the referendum. Their tweets have been turned into billboards and posted. The things that we put on social media, they never really go away. And perhaps there are a whole generation of teenagers who are going to find that out to their harm in years to come. It's an important point, isn't it? Joseph and White Flag. Now, I always live in a little bit of trepidation when Warren comes in to look back on the week, because inevitably he comes up with a football story. And, you know, it really, I mean, I've said this to you before. You have to remember, I grew up in Coventry in the 70s. There wasn't a lot of exciting football going on.
Your football prowess impresses me.
And
it makes me look good.
It also has to be said, you know, my national team is Scotland. So, you know, Ali's Army notwithstanding, again, not an awful lot of things to interest me in football. And every time you come in, I think you do it on purpose.
Well, you make me look good on my prowess of not knowing much about football.
So is this Nathan Jones bloke that's going to Stoke then as manager?
He's a great... he's a young manager, but he's also fairly outspoken, and he's a Christian. Follow of Jesus, and he shares about his faith. He's got a number of tattoos that express his faith. But the interesting thing about this story is he says, I believe everything is God's will. But then there's been some interjection. As we said off air, that football, or when a team does well in a city like Leicester, it massively impacts the city.
Oh, yes.
Prosperity, the economy, but also just morale and everything else.
National identity. I remember when Coventry actually, on one occasion, did well and won a cup. I can't for life remember what it was now, but it must have been in the 70s, because it was before I left. So they won a cup. And my mate, who'd been a Sky Blues fan all his life, he wore his scarf through thick and thin, summer and winter. No matter what the regulations said at school about uniform, he wore his Sky Blues scarf. He was proud of his commitment. Okay, he got really annoyed at all these latecomers to the party who now are wearing the colours because they were doing well. You know, these fair-weather fans, as it were. So, but it does change a city's perspective, doesn't it, when their team do good?
Oh, of course. And I think Nathan's here. He's done great at all the clubs he's served, and he's all talked about building the correct culture and environment. And I think the thing about this story is you always get this, everything, do you pray for a winning? You never know if it's been taken out of context, but as we've already said, it makes a massive impact on a city. And we should be praying for our cities. But I think one of your other friends and regular Bishop visitors, Bishop Jeff, said we should be praying for promotion. And although I get that, but another as a Christian, certainly as sports chaplains, that's really dangerous, because nearly every club in the country has a chaplain. We're going to stand on the pitch and call down fire from heaven and who does God favour. So we would never encourage that per se, but we do encourage to pray for people. Pray for Nathan as he navigates Stoke, because it does impact people. It impacts people's lives. It impacts people's communities. But would I pray for a win? Have I ever prayed for a win?
Now then.
But I wouldn't encourage people to pray for a win.
I think that was what's called a pregnant pause there, wasn't it? I mean, I suppose the thing is, there is this part of it of looking for the good of your city, though, and we're encouraged to do that, aren't we? And there are whole sorts of things, like Coventry's got City of Culture for 2021, I think it is. You know, and there were lots of other cities up, and Christians in those communities were going, actually, we want to pray that we get it, because it would do such good for us. Now, does that mean God thinks Coventry is more important than somewhere else? Of course it doesn't. But there is that sense of tapping into God's purpose for a community at a time, isn't there?
Definitely. And there are seasons. I've just been reading, it's the new year, so you start your new Bible plan.
Yeah.
And just seeing God's hand on Joseph's life and throughout Genesis, the Abraham, Isaac and Jacob and whole twists and turns of life, and God does desire good things for us. And so often when we pray, it says God knows the desires of our hearts, but actually it's also praying God's will, not our will. And it's a challenge sometimes to hear, but God's placed us where we're placed for a reason.
Yes.
And we're supposed to be light. We're supposed to make a difference. And we should be praying for people. We should be praying for our cities. And we should be making a difference.
Yeah. It is an interesting thought, isn't it? Because Bishop Jeff, who is an old friend of the programme, and I don't want to put words in his mouth when he's not here to defend himself. The quote I saw was that he said, "We would certainly pray for promotion should he ask us to." Now, that was a quote in a national newspaper, so, you know, pinch of salt and so on and so forth. But of course, he was also involved in the civic prayer service that included prayer for promotion for Stoke back in 2008 when they went from First Division up to the Premier League. So it certainly had an impact on that local community. It's just an interesting question. Should we do that sort of thing? What do you think? If you've got an opinion today, get in touch and let us know. Email paul@ucb.co.uk.
This mess, all I need is my happiness. Can I get that delivered to my address? Cause there's a longing in my soul, consume my culture to fill the hole. If only I jumped up the payroll. I'm building up my home, I think I chose the wrong cornerstone. None of these things make me feel less alone. I'm unsatisfied with the concept of living for work or the weekend. So go make another transaction. Guessing that's a distraction. Finding true satisfaction in Christ alone. Think I might be in danger. I'm called to live as a stranger. I'm beginning to feel like I might be too at home. So Spirit, open up my eyes. Why don't we renew my mind? As I seek that I may find all in you.
Well, hey, look at the time. Doesn't time fly when you're enjoying yourself?
When you're having fun.
When you're having fun, lad. Ah, that's right. Well, it's nearly 5 to 11, which means it's almost time to say ta-ra to Warren. Warren Evans, my guest today, who's been taking a look back on the week for us from Sports Chaplaincy. Hey, you've got a follow-up thought on that story about Nathan Jones, haven't you?
Yeah, it was just one final statement that the bishop did, and it said, it's so impressive that Nathan is a able to talk openly and honestly about his faith, in particular great that he has found strength from this during times of adversity. And it challenged me in two ways. One, I know sports chaplains were there for people when they're going through adversity.
Yeah.
But actually also challenged me to say, how honest and open are we about our faith? Because there's such a fear factor these days. Yeah. I know evangelical alliance, because they say, hey, it's okay to share about your faith. I think, so how honest are we about our faith? You know, if we get so much great strength and God's so good, why do we sometimes find it difficult to share?
Yeah. Yeah. You see, it's kind of easy for me, you know, funnily enough. Christian radio station, I can bang on about it till I'm blue in the face. But, of course, we do live in a world where people are more hesitant. And yet, as you find, as your guys find, sports chaplaincy, there is a willingness from people to hear.
Yes, and I think it's all about time and relationship.
Yes.
It's all about looking at the person, not to tell them what you want, but you're willing to engage with them and help them, support them. And in that relationship, then they ask questions, and God's journeying with everybody, and it's where they're at in their journey, and we're there just to support and answer questions when they're asked. But I think part of it's, we hear evangelism or mission, and it's about ramming something down someone's throat, and actually it's about journeying with people and living with people and sharing with people.
And if you're interested in finding out more about the work of sports chaplaincy, and indeed how they might have an impact on if you're involved in a local sports club or a gym or whatever, or if you would like to be involved perhaps in that role of caring for those who are involved in that community that exists every weekend, length and breadth of the nation, very often with stuff going on, well, have a look at their website for yourself. sportschaplaincy.org.uk is the website, sportschaplaincy.org.uk. Warren Evans is the CEO. It's always a pleasure, sir, to have you in. Thank you for coming and joining us again today.
It's always a privilege to join you, Paul, and have some fun.
We're going to head up to the news now at 11 o'clock. After the news, we're going to be chatting about the problem of kids getting involved in gambling, and we'll be bringing you our repeat of the week.
UCB One.
Which this week is all about the World Watch List that our friends at Open Doors published earlier on in the week. Mandisa then to the news.